Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, the man that probably has the only nonsensical podcast on the planet, and the guy that brings you this podcast live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of the Buckeye State. How are you all doing here? I am glad to be back, and I'm going to talk just real briefly about this episode, and then I'm going to tie up some loose ends. First and foremost, my guest on this episode, on this edition of the PVD Cast, is Mr. Paul Markoff. Now, for you longtime fans, for you folks that have listened since day one, or whenever you joined this freight train known as the PVD Cast, whatever episode that was, but what I was getting at was that Paul Markoff joined us in June to talk about the big summer movies that were coming out. And I love movies. It's a hobby of mine. It's a passion of mine. And to be honest, you know, as I reflect a little bit about my life, I don't really know where that love of movies comes from, because my father and my mother were not big entertainment junkies. They didn't go to the movies. They're not really big fans of movies. I don't really think that, besides the television show Dallas, I can't name another television show that my father actually watched and enjoyed. Yeah, he was a big fan of J.R. Ewing and the rest of the Klan down there in Dallas, Texas. So I really don't know where it came from, but I've just been fascinated by it, especially when I kind of got into when I got into college, I started branching out and started to find independent film, and I think that that's when it just really became a passion for me. And I think, again, it goes back to that independent spirit of mine that it just, you know, I admire the fact that those folks that are DIY, do it yourself. And so, but I'm a huge movie buff. I cannot wait to have you guys listen to my conversation with Paul, as we're going to talk about possible Oscar contenders, some of the big films that are coming out here in the end of the year, which obviously one of them is Star Wars The Force Awakens. But with that, let's talk about a few loose ends real quick. First of all, I want to thank everybody that gave me an awesome tweet that retweeted, followed, commented, texted me about my previous episode with Mr. Brian Castle. Man, Brian's a great dude. I was so happy to have him on. I know he's got some things in the works that are hopefully going to continue to propel his career forward, man. And I think it was a pretty honest and frank conversation, too. So I'm glad that everybody enjoyed it. I'm glad that people really found it interesting, found it entertaining. And that ultimately, that's what I want to do, is I want to entertain you folks. I mean, why not? You're spending about 45 minutes to an hour with me each week, or each episode, and, you know, that's the goal. So, all right, let's talk about something that was not entertaining, and something that just happened a few nights ago, and that was, of course, the WWE TLC pay-per-view. Oh my God, was it awful. I hate to be a negative Nancy, and I hate to be Debbie Downer, but this pay-per-view just wasn't at all entertaining. I will say that I think the WWE's been on a streak of having okay pay-per-views. Nothing spectacular, nothing awful, okay. And you know what? I'm fine with that. Have an okay pay-per-view. Going into this one, I felt that it was a little bit haphazardly thrown together. And man, it was really bad. I gotta say that I think the only match that entertained me was the Intercontinental title match between Dean Ambrose and Kevin Owens. I think that match was really good. I felt that several other matches just fell flat. Yes, the tag team three-way dance ladder match. Man, there were some phenomenal high spots, no doubt. But overall, I thought it was kind of blah. The Team ECW versus the Wyatts was probably the most boring table match I've ever seen in my whole entire life. It was just brutal. It's Charlotte and Paige, I thought was okay, but not knowing who the heel was in that matchup made it really difficult to be vested and be interested in what was going on in the ring. And I'm just going to jump to what I thought was awful, the main event, Sheamus and Roman Reigns. I just really didn't think there was much to that match. It was just, as my colleague Adam Michaels says, these guys just breaking a bunch of shit. And that really was what it was. And then the awful, whatever, it was like 12, 15 minutes long beatdown of Triple H at the end of the pay-per-view was just abysmal. Overall, I gotta say, shame on you, WWE. What an awful pay-per-view. And hopefully on Wednesday, which, as I'm recording this intro, it is Tuesday. On Wednesday, the big WWE NXT show from London is going to be broadcast on the WWE Network. And I'm very excited for that, and I hope it doesn't let me down. I don't think it will. I mean, when you have Samoa Joe versus Finn Balor, I think that that's going to be an amazing match in itself. You have Cassidy, and Enzo taking on Dash and Dawson. Asuka is on the paper, or on the event. I mean, there's so many stars there in NXT that I think it's going to be an awesome event, and I think it blows TLC right out of the water. That's my prediction here. We'll wait and see. As I said, I'm recording this intro Tuesday night here, and so we'll just have to wait and see. I am kind of bummed that it is going to air at 3 o'clock, and I will still be at work at the shoot job, so I'm going to have to avoid the internet until I get home, but... Alright, well, one thing you shouldn't avoid, that is Bluehost.com, especially if you want to have a website. And I don't care if you want a website for personal, for professional use, whatever, man. Bluehost.com is the official web hosting service for the PVDcast. And I'm telling you right now, I just looked the other day at their pricing. They've slashed prices again for the holiday season. Hey, don't take my word on it. Just head on over to Bluehost.com and get all the information that you need to build an awesome website, to have an awesome website. Bluehost.com is the place to go. So with that being said, I'm going to throw it to a quick musical interlude. And on the other side of that, you're going to hear my conversation as we talk movies, people, between myself and Mr. Paul Markoff. All right, ladies and gentlemen, back at you here, John Orlando, joined by Mr. Paul Markoff. Paul, how are you?
Very good.
It's been, what, 6 months since the last time we saw you? June, correct?
Yeah. A lot of movies I've watched between now and then.
So this is going to be a very lengthy podcast, is what we're saying. So I think what we'll do is we're going to talk a little bit about some of the movies that you and I have seen since June up till now.
Sounds good.
Talk about some of the upcoming movies. I mean, there is more movies coming out than just one Star Wars, The Force Awakens. There are some others coming out.
Right, there's The Hateful Eight, The Remnant.
Right, exactly. We have some other ones to talk about, and maybe we'll talk about a few Oscar contenders, maybe?
Sure.
Okay. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you saw since the last time we talked, which was in June.
Okay.
What did you like? Let's go with that. What did you like?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of duds that come out just after June. That's the kind of the tail end of the summer movie season.
What were some of the duds?
I've become so forgetful. They're completely forgettable, apparently.
Well, there you go.
But I mean, the big ones that we talked about previously, you had Jurassic World and mm-hmm. Inside Out. Those were a couple of my favorite during that time period. And then you push into more of the Oscar bait that comes out even late October and November, which we've done some of this past show. We did Spotlight, Brooklyn, Joy. Those are ones that are going to be coming up.
Do you think personally that those have... Well, let's go ahead and just talk about it. Do you think that some of those, like Joy, Brooklyn, Spotlight, do you think that... Because they're getting a lot of Oscar buzz. Personally, do you think that they have what it takes to win Best Picture if they're nominated?
I would say Spotlight.
Okay.
Of those three is one that has a shot at Best Picture.
Gotcha.
The other's probably in some of the secondary categories, the acting categories.
Gotcha. Okay. While we're on it, let's just go ahead. We'll talk about Oscars right now, if we will. Because I think one of the films that surprised me that's getting some buzz was something that I hadn't seen last time we talked, but I did get to see it this summer, twice as a matter of fact, Mad Max Fury Road. It's been being tossed out there, the George Miller, possibly Best Director category, possibly. So what do you think? Do you think it has a chance to win Oscars?
I think it's one of those, I don't think it has much of a chance to win the Oscars. I think it has a chance to be nominated for the Oscars.
Okay.
I think if there are a couple on the bubble, shall you say, of pop films that, sure. that have come out, popular films that have come out. Typically, you know, it's the more, for lack of a better term, artistic films
sure.
that are recognized come Oscar time.
Right. Mad Max is clearly balls-to-the-wall action film.
Yeah, I mean,
from the start.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, but I mean, certainly there's an artistic nature
sure.
To what they're doing there. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it as much as apparently you did.
Oh,
you I enjoyed it. I gave it a B- for our show, but I would say in general, it's been a critical darling, which
yes.
I think is what would lead it to be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I still think I'm not sure it's still considered quote unquote serious enough to be considered a win.
Sure.
But I think it's one of those maybe on the outside looking in. I think Inside Out is also one of those. It hasn't. Mm-hmm. Gotten quite a critical push here at the end of the year when people start talking about awards, but that's one I will undoubtedly be in my top 10. Might be one or two on my list right now to be.
Well, just to wrap up with Mad Max Fury Road, I did see it. I saw it twice. I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed it because as a huge fan of the previous films, loved Mad Max, loved Road Warrior, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. It was okay. I don't hate it as much as I did as a kid, but I thought that it held true to that whole vision of George Miller. Like, I think that's what impressed me the most. There was those little nuances that I just appreciated, like the fact that Max does not talk that much, as was the case in the other movies. He did not have much to say, even in the first one. I liked some of the cinematic things that George Miller seems to do in every single film, so I appreciated that, but it was an excellent action flick. I mean, just bottom line.
Well, and with Mad Max, here he's able to create the world that he probably envisioned
from the outset.
Where
with technology, yeah.
Yes, he was restricted to a certain extent. Even right. with, at the time, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, certainly it was at the height, at that time, special effects-wise, and he could do some neat things. But here, there's almost no limitations
right,
to what
sure.
he can do.
Yeah.
And he's really created this, essentially, non-stop, you know, adrenaline-fueled action-adventure.
Gotcha. All right, some other possible Oscar contenders that might get nominated, might win. Room, which is based on a book, if I recall correctly, about a young lady and her son, if I remember correctly,
yes.
being held confined to a very small shed, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term. Do you think that that's got a possibility to take home some hardware?
I think she does. I think
okay.
Brie Larson, she's probably going to be, if you're filling out your Oscar pool sheet or thinking about what you might fill out, I've been doing Oscar pools for, I don't know how many years now, 15, 20 years. She, I think, is going to be one. She's probably going to be one or two
mm-hmm.
as being considered for Best Actress would be my guess. The film, I'm not sure it's you know, the traction's there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be, again, it used to be that there were only five spots available for Best Picture, but they've changed kind of the criteria, so you could have as many as 10 pictures nominated. You may have as few as maybe even 4 or 5. I think it has a chance. I think it has a better chance probably than Mad Max or Inside Out of getting in there. You know, if there were a, quote, top 10 films that were being
yes.
out for Best Picture,
mm-hmm.
my guess would be this one would probably fall somewhere along the lines between, like, the 6th or 8th picture to get into that race.
So another one that's being mentioned, and one that I'm intrigued to see, and I don't think it's opened yet here in Columbus, is Carol.
Right.
Which is the tale of a lesbian affair, I guess you could say, back in the
right.
1950s, back
yeah.
when that was very, very taboo, with Cate Blanchett, if I remember correctly, and Rooney Mara.
Right.
Did you get a chance to preview that yet for Now Playing, or no?
I haven't yet. No,
okay.
We have right. that one on screener. That's set for the next edition.
Okay. All right.
And I just got word that it's not going to be opening in the Columbus market until the 15th of January.
Yeah, I knew it was very late. It was not going to make the, I guess you could say, cutoff for those that are interested, like Oscar-wise, if you will, by the end of the year. That was going to be delayed, so...
Right, it'll probably open I don't know when it opens in L.A.
Okay.
or New York, probably the 25th.
Probably.
Just before the first of the year, so it'll be eligible for the awards. But that is one that is getting a lot of
mm-hmm.
a lot of hype and a lot of traction, at least with people's year-end lists that have already viewed it in the big cities,
yeah.
or even here on screener.
I actually think it sounds like a very fascinating tale. Just personally myself, I find the idea of having to kind of live that double life, I found that interesting. So
and Todd Haynes, who directs the film,
right.
kind
yeah.
of did something similar to that with Far From Heaven, which I'm trying to remember when that came out. If it came out 10 years ago or something. Oh, yeah. It was 2006
or something, I thought.
Yeah, with Julianne Moore and Dennis Haysbert.
Okay, The Big Short is another one that is possible to get some Oscar buzz as well.
Right.
That's an all-star cast.
Yeah, and that's another one. That's another one that I have on screener that we'll be doing. We'll be doing for the next show. It's just there's so many movies that come out now.
Sure, yeah.
That are, you know, noteworthy. Even for our last taping and now playing, we did Concussion and we did Joy, which haven't opened yet either.
Correct.
But yeah, The Big Short. You're right. I think that might be one that it's slowly building. Mm-hmm. Initially, you hadn't heard as much about it as you had some of the other big ones, but. I think that's kind of building a following. As you mentioned, just with its pedigree, with the cast that's in it, it's
Brad Pitt, Carell, you got Gosling, Christian Bale, you know, and Adam McKay has a solid track record as well.
It's just funny that he's making something that's serious. He's obviously known for doing the comedies with Will Ferrell.
Yeah, that was the thing that really struck me as odd. I was like, really? Okay, that dude. All right, but hey, I think one of the things we talked about last time, and one of the movies I got to see over the summer, Ant-Man, Peyton Reed, that was kind of a different avenue for him. He's not a superhero type of movie guy. And so he was going in a different way there. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about Ant-Man in a minute. Last couple here that was that I've researched and kind of that's getting some buzz, of course, Bridge of Spies, which was the Tom Hanks spy thriller.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that one seems to be kind of falling off, to be honest with you. It didn't get nominated for many Golden Globes. I think it was only the only acting. Hanks was not nominated for his role in Bridge of Spies for the Golden Globes. And sometimes that's kind of a precursor to what you might think is going to be nominated for the Oscars. Sometimes not, but more often than not, the ones that are getting nominated for Globes will get nominated for the Oscars and vice versa. But Hanks still has a shot. The movie still has a shot, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm a little surprised that it hasn't gained more traction. It is a terrific film.
I was going to ask you about that because, to be honest, I think that you heard about it, and then like 3 weeks, and boom, then you didn't hear about it. It kind of just went underground. Not that it went out of theaters, but there wasn't as much buzz. I was going to ask you about that. Was it because it was a bad film, or maybe because just the powers that be decided that we're going to market it this way, and that's it?
My guess is that it was too hard of a sell. It was too hard to sell the story in 2 minutes. I guess I would have played up, and they do to a certain extent, but I think I would have pumped it even more. Maybe even sell it for what it really isn't. But there's essentially two stories going on in Bridge of Spies. Mm-hmm. And I think to tell that story in a 2 minute trailer is too hard. Mm-hmm. It's too hard of a sell. So I think that you get a little sprinkle of what it was about, but it was too hard to understand what Bridge of Spies was really about going into it.
Speaking of which, I want to talk about it. I have down in notes Concussion. I must say that I've seen many different trailers for it, and it seems that I'm not sure that I know exactly what to expect out of that film. To me, it seems like it's presenting in one particular trailer that this is based on reality. This is what happened in the NFL, and this is Will Smith's character is the doctor that figured this out. But then there seems to be a little bit of a conspiracy theory type of vibe to it, too, in some of the trailers. At least that's how I interpret it, and maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, there's a little bit of that in the film.
Okay.
It's not really, to be honest with you.
Okay.
There's no real conspiracy theory or...
Spoiler alert, there's not a conspiracy theory to kill Will Smith's character.
That's not really what the film's about, though.
Right, no, but I mean, you get what I'm saying with that. The trailer's kind of... I looked at it and go, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know what to make of this trailer. Based on this 2 minutes that you've shown me, I'm not sure... you're not selling it to me. You mentioned, the idea of selling the movie to
It's more of a character-driven drama.
Okay.
About a Nigerian doctor, Dr. Amalu, that Will Smith portrays, that comes, he studies cadavers at the Pittsburgh coroner's office, whatnot, examines the bodies, and it leads him, he eventually does Mike Webster's, mm-hmm. which is a former Pittsburgh Steelers player that suffered from some forms of dementia, and he was only,
mid-50s maybe? Yeah. 55-ish maybe, or something?
Maybe even younger than that.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
So that leads him to derive that his condition was due to playing football, and then he goes about studying others that have passed that are football players to learn that they suffered from CTE. And then it kind of goes from there with him going up against the NFL. And there's an element of, is someone after him? He starts looking over his shoulder, but yeah, that's such a small portion of the picture. It's more paranoia than anything.
A couple of other real quick films getting Oscar buzz. The Revenant.
Yeah, I have not seen
The Revenant. Yeah, with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy. That looks interesting. It looks intriguing.
Right, and it also has the guy that directed it won Best Director in the Picture for Birdman last
year. Right, and I can never say the guy's name. Alejandro, whatever.
I think it's Inarritu.
Thank you. Okay, good.
I'm not sure I am, but hopefully I sound like I know what I'm saying. That's the key when you're on TV and radio, right? It's to right, sound like yeah, you know what
exactly,
you're about.
Exactly. And The Martian and Hateful Eight also getting some Oscar buzz, possibly.
Right. I guess I'm a little surprised. I enjoyed The Martian. Okay. After watching it, I never thought this is Best Picture material.
Okay.
It never stuck out to me as being anything more than kind of a slightly entertaining diversion.
Okay.
But you're right. I think it'll be up.
Okay.
I'm sure that'll be up. And Hateful Eight, I'd be surprised if that's not. It's got, you know, typically if it's Tarantino, it's going to be up.
Yeah, just by name recognition alone, he gets a little bit of a nod.
Yeah, that was when I was disappointed I wasn't able to attend the press screening, and we haven't got a screener for, so I'm going to have to wait to watch that until it comes out.
You know what? That's one of my list of movies to see. I'm kind of curious to see that. I like Tarantino. I think that the cast is very interesting, so I'm excited for that. So, all right. So, let me just ask: how are you in your Oscar polls? How have you been doing? Do you have a winning record? Do you keep tabs?
Well,
you just said like a few minutes ago. You do them all the time every year,
and this is more gives you the level of the competition.
Oh, okay.
It's very competitive. My co-host on Now Playing, Mark Piper, has been in the pool for several years. My wife, who typically does the necessary amount of research, and a friend of mine, Darren, who is a big movie buff and also watches the Vegas odds to know.
Oh,
to
really?
What to bet on.
That's hardcore.
Yes.
That's hardcore.
Yes. So the competition is very steep every year. I've only won it, I think, three times in all the years that we've
won. Wow. Well, hey. Yeah. Three times is better than none.
Yes, I suppose. But you would think someone, that goes to as many movies and pays as close attention as I do might fare a little better in the own pool that I'm running, but no, I think I've only won three times.
That's all right. Maybe this year. You'll make it a fourth. Yeah,
that's right. There's always next year.
There you go.
And this year is next year.
All right, so let's talk a little bit. We'll go back to what we were going to talk about, some of the movies that we've seen in between the last time you were on. I mentioned Ant-Man. I assume that you saw it, Peyton Reed's
I did.
Film. What did you think of it?
To be honest, I was a little underwhelmed. I thought they would enjoy the idea of him being smaller more. I thought they'd throw him into more scenarios where it kind of gets maybe a little loony.
And
maybe that was just my expectation, as opposed to I didn't have any background regarding the comics or, you know, the history behind Ant-Man. I just had my own expectations, knowing about what the premise was, and I thought they'd kind of go a little crazy with his miniature size. And
yeah, the most stuff. I see where you're coming from with that. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was awful. I think that it was solid, and I think that it was several superhero movies. I think if you're solid, that's okay. You know, if you're entertained by it and the story is fun, you know, and I thought that was the case. The thing that surprised me was Michael Douglas, because I really didn't anticipate him to do as good of a job as I think that he did as playing the older, you know, Hank Pym. I just kind of thought that his skills as an actor would not translate to a comic book movie. You know, because he's done so many serious pieces that I thought, he's going to be stiff. This is not going to work. But I thought he did a very good job.
No, he did. He held his own. I thought Rudd was good.
Yes.
I even thought Evangeline Lilly was good.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess, to a certain extent, I think I'm suffering from Marvel fatigue.
Because, oh, okay. Wow.
I mean, I'm trying to remember how many different Marvel films came out. It seemed like there was one once a month at least, if not It seemed like every other week.
Yes, and you might as well get used to it, because I think that that's the way that they're going to go. They're going to pump those bad boys out.
Well, and they're they're raking in the dollars with these films, and now they're doing, their
Civil War with Captain America, which I think is the next one to come, I think.
Right, and I'm hoping that kind of changes the dynamic of what they've been doing with some of the other pictures. Most mm-hmm. of them, it's the origin story. And, mm-hmm. How they become the superhero, and it kind of feels like it's the same beat.
Yes,
from one picture to the next.
I will say that I think Civil War was Marvel Comics' last, and this goes back 10 years. Civil War was 2006, 2007. I thought that storyline in the comic book was very good, so I want to see how it translates. I know they're going to tweak some things from what I've read, but I'm curious to see how it translates to the big screen, because I think it was an innovative, interesting story. And for those that don't know, it's, that there was an accident in the comic book. This is how it went. There was an accident where the Thunderbolts destroyed an elementary school, killing some children. And therefore, the government steps in and says, no more. You must be a registered superhero. And then there's a divide. There are those like Tony Stark to say, that's no problem. Because, hell, everybody knows I'm Iron Man anyways. I will definitely unmask and I will apply for all the proper paperwork. And then there are those who say, no, like Captain America, no, this is our freedom. This is our right to do. To wear a mask and to fight for good. And then it goes off in different little storylines of, if you're not registered, then we have to capture you. No, and it goes off from that. So I'm curious to see how they're going to do that in the film, how they're going to handle that. Although I think that they're going to kind of add Bucky Barnes into that mix, which I'm curious to see how all that sorts out.
See, and they allude to the fact that there's going to be some tension with the Avengers pictures. But they never really, right. They never really do it. It never materializes in right. The Avengers pictures, and
exactly.
That to me was more of the compelling element of the Avengers pictures. And I was really disappointed, to be honest. I know I'm in the minority here, but I was really disappointed with the Avengers pictures that they didn't expound upon that tension between. It's more of kind of a jokey, I don't get along with.
Especially with the second one, yeah. Especially with Age of Ultron, I agree with you. I think they could have played that up with Age of Ultron. I totally agree with that. I think the first one I really liked. I think the second one was good, not as good as the first one, but this is what we're going to see over the next few months.
But I'm hoping with Civil War that it takes a new avenue.
Sure, right, yeah, most definitely.
There's
most
some
definitely.
Conflict, and it's not something I feel like I've seen month after month after month.
Right. Speaking of conflict, I got to say that I am a little hesitant, since we're talking about superhero movies, I'm a little hesitant about Batman versus Superman. I from the trailers I've seen, I'm not real super excited for it. I don't know. And I can't put my finger on it. If you say, why, John? I just don't know. There's just something there that just is not exciting me. Like some of the other trailers for like Star Wars or for Deadpool. There's just something that's not getting me. I don't know.
Well, the last... I know I'm in the minority, but the last Superman film that was directed by Zack Snyder, I didn't care for.
Okay.
To me, it was a lot of... He seems to be going for the epic proportions amount with... the action and the amount mm-hmm. of destruction.
Okay.
And I think that can work to a certain extent, but I don't think that needs to be the focus of the picture. And you got down to the finale scene of The Last Superman, where basically it's a series of throwing a bad guy or Superman blasting through, skyscraper after skyscraper, and I don't know, it lost its effect. And to me, the trailer for Superman versus Batman seems to be
more of that same.
More of the same, yeah. Right. Now, to me, there's still the interesting dynamic of, and certainly in our political age, there's going to be some relevance between, Batman alludes to Superman being an illegal alien.
Sure, yeah, right.
Batman's, I'm trying to remember, I think, they allude to it a certain extent in the Dark Knight of the surveillance and its impact
sure.
and
yeah.
how much should be used. And I'm hoping it touches on some of those things. I like that nature of the...
Yeah, yeah, and I think that the big gripe for Man of Steel was that it was too dark, quote-unquote, because it wasn't as campy, let's just be honest. The other Superman movies were always campy.
That's fine, it's fine to take them seriously.
I don't mind that either, but that was the big gripe, that I heard. I did not mind Man of Steel, I liked it. Funny, it was a movie that I kind of stayed away from the internet reading, much like as we'll talk here in a moment about Star Wars, I've done the same thing, I've totally... kind of disconnected from the internet when it comes to that movie, because I want to be surprised. I don't want to know what's coming. And for Superman, that was the same instance. So I dug it. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see how I guess it comes when it comes out, which is February, if I remember correctly, right? February or May?
I'm not sure. It seems like it would come out later, but yeah, I think pushing May, up maybe. It used to be the big blockbusters started coming out on Memorial Day.
Yes, I'm sorry. It is May. February is Deadpool. My bad. Sorry. I believe that's the schedule for that.
Yeah, but they've been pushing. I mean, it's been for years now that used to be Memorial Day kind of kicked off a blockbuster season or the summer movie season. But that occurs back now, yeah. I would say, mid-April.
Yeah, exactly. Seems like
when they started. Or at least maybe the dud blockbusters that they're you know, trying to push as a blockbuster but aren't quite getting the sell job done.
Sure.
Come out in April.
Okay, so another film that I went to see that I enjoyed, Trainwreck. Amy Schumer, obviously, I think, really broke out this year, and I liked it. I thought it was a unique take on the romantic comedy.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's the role reversal where she plays kind of the... it's not womanizing, but sort of
manizing.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's not a word, but
no. But if there was, that would be what it was. Yeah, she'd be a manizer.
And I thoroughly enjoyed Colin Quinn in the movie. I thought he played a phenomenal role as the father.
No, I would agree. And we're going to have our nominations for our critic circle.
Uh-huh.
And he's one that I think deserves some recognition.
Yeah,
I thought he was terrific.
I do too.
And he's kind of he's the reason for why she is the way she is in the picture,
mm-hmm.
and for being such a complete and utter jerk of a father, it still hits on some points.
I kind of was like, I think that I've had some friends that have fathers like this, you know.
Well, there's a certain level. There's still a certain level of humanity.
No, yeah, you're right.
Character
exactly
that makes him oddly empathetic.
Yeah. Straight Out of Compton.
Which I liked it, yeah.
I liked it, too. I thought it was a little bit long, but I liked it. That was the era that I grew up in with that particular style of hip-hop, and I love it. And so, in fact, I love Boom 106.3 in Columbus. I'm just going to throw that out there. Old school hip-hop. Dig that.
No, I like that a lot, too. But, yeah, I mean, they're the originators of gangster rap.
Yeah.
Ones that started it all, and...
Giamatti did a great job in his role as Jerry, the pseudo scumbag kind of manager, but he wasn't truly 100% scummy, but he was kind of a little bit shady.
Yeah, he was still looking out for himself.
But, sure, yeah, at the end. Yeah.
But I think it does a good job of kind of capturing, as you mentioned, kind of the essence of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the origin story is interesting,
yeah.
How these guys got started, and the fact that although there's a reason why they're the ones that started gangster rap, and it's because their sound was so much better than anything else at the mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. as far as rap was concerned.
Well, we already talked ad nauseum about Mad Max Fury Road, something I saw. Spectre, the new James Bond film, which I just saw actually about 2 months ago. I was a little underwhelmed. I'm going to use that one.
No, I was too, but I'll be honest with you. I typically am with most Bond films.
Really?
Well,
you're not a Bond fan?
No, it's
okay.
It's the same. It's the same story every time, almost. I mean, you know what you're. You know,
well, it's true.
You know, he's going to sleep with some femme fatales. You're going to get the snarling bad guy, which I was okay with this last film because I thought Christoph Waltz was. He's terrific in everything he does. So,
but you know what though? I think he was underutilized.
No,
because he wasn't in the movie more than like 8 minutes and.
I think he's in a little more than that, but
yes,
you're right. He
didn't do anything with him. He just,
you're right. It's a 2-hour, 15-minute film.
Yeah.
They could have... He was definitely underutilized.
There were lots of avenues he could have gone with that character, or they could have gone, with that character, and they just, I don't know, he just was there. It just, you know...
Yeah, I guess I was looking for something. I mean, I know with Craig, and I think this is his last Bond picture. He's getting tired of the Bond films, too. But if they're going to add the extra edge to him as being Bond,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of getting away from more of the sly, easygoing Bond, you know, mm-hmm. more of the kind of darker, you know, tough guy Bond.
Which I think they did in the first film with Craig. I think Casino Royale was really well done in giving that edgier, darker side to Bond. And then I think the subsequent films have not lived up to that. I think that... in my personal opinion, I think that they've set the bar very, very high with Casino Royale, and then everything else has not hit that same level.
I just wish they could do something. Maybe, I mean, thematically, again, it's getting darker and supposedly more edgy, but just mixing it up a little bit.
Plot-wise. Sure.
I think, to me, an example of doing what they're doing with the Bond movies, but doing it better, is the Mission Impossibles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some... There's a film I don't think we talked about.
No, and I did not get to see it, but you obviously saw it. You liked Rogue Nation?
Yes. Those feel fresh. Mm-hmm. Rogue Nation is more entwined with the plot and mystery of, you know, Hunt going up against this female spy. Mm-hmm. And is she playing him? Is she along with him? There's a very subtle romance. It's not really romance, but you can feel the tension between the two, and you're wondering, you know, kind of what's going on here. There's a lot more wondering, and there's a lot more suspense built into that Mission Impossible plot-wise. The time before, the suspense was in the action itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really feel the suspense either plot-wise or action-wise in the Bond pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And again, more often than not in these big blockbusters, you know where it's going to start and where it's going to end. But in the midst of the action, there's, you know, there's this suspense that you feel like you don't know how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bond pictures, I don't think so.
And I agree with you. I think Spectre was that. It was just like one action sequence to another, to another, to another, and there was no real build-up. I agree with you wholeheartedly with that one. I didn't hate Spectre, but I didn't love it either. I felt very underwhelmed. Like, I was like, it was okay. So, let's see. What other things? Now, again, I'm obviously not in the same caliber of viewing films as you are. But what's some other things this summer that we overlooked, or any time between now and back to June? What other things do we overlook? Because I have a couple oddball picks, but I'm going to save those for last as we wrap this section of our conversation up. Because I do have a couple oddball picks I saw, but I don't want to spoil them just yet. Anything else that we kind of overlooked? I'm trying to think of.
We haven't talked about Creed.
Creed
has turned out to be a big hit.
Yes.
I had very little expectations when you're talking about kind of. It felt, if you've seen the trailers, it felt like they were recycling the Rocky story.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
It's good. It's good to hear, because I really want to see it. I haven't seen it yet. And because I think it's. Thank God it's not another. Let's put Rocky Balboa in the ring, you know.
No, well, you couldn't at this point.
Right.
But you know. And I've liked most the... Actually, I've liked... I would probably recommend... I mean, it's been a while since I've seen 2, 3, and 4. But we did Rocky Balboa for Now Playing. I think it's a solid, okay, solid film. And okay, I think, again, thematically, at least with Rocky Balboa... And now with Creed, is they're doing something differently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're doing something different. I mean, it's a completely new character. I suppose, you know, it's Apollo's son.
Sure, yeah.
But he's kind of grasping with his own identity,
mm-hmm,
in the picture, because he was an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays into that, kind of goes into a bit of Apollo's legacy and how that might be tainted,
mm-hmm,
due to his illegitimate son.
Right, philandering, if you will.
Yeah. Then, of course, Rocky does come into the picture. But Rocky's dealing with his own issues at the time. And, it grasps how life goes after you've peaked your,
yeah,
you know, sure, athletic prime. And,
sure,
you know, what there is at the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely well done.
Excellent.
I think it's got an outside shot. I'd love to see it up for Best Picture.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think... At least from the outset, from the trailers, I don't think people saw this as an Oscar contender. I think Stallone will be up.
Oh, really? Best supporting actor?
Yeah, I'd be mildly surprised if he's not.
Really? Okay.
But I think
he was that strong in the film.
Yeah, he's terrific. Okay. I mean, because again, although it's the same character, it's a character that's grappling with several other issues, and it's a new storyline for him too.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
So it's not just the same. Not the same old Rocky, it's an old Rocky.
Other things, I'm trying to think if there's any other films that we haven't discussed. I'll throw out a couple of my oddballs.
Yeah, so yeah, here, here's out. For some reason, my...
All right, here is one that was not in theaters that I'm aware of, but it was on Netflix, and I heard a lot about it. It's a very short film, 30 minutes, Kung Fury. If you have not,
I have not seen it.
I give it. It is a absolutely ridiculous parody of 80s action movies. And it's about a police officer in Miami, Florida, named Kung Fury, who is a master of Kung Fu, who must go back in time to stop Adolf Hitler, a.k.a. the Kung Fuhrer, from destroying Miami in 1985. It's ridiculous. It is farcical. But it is hilarious. I highly recommend it. It again, 30 minutes. It's produced, I believe, by a company in Sweden. And it's really got the cheesy music. It is filmed so that you think you're watching it on VHS because you get tracking lines, which I give a tip of the hat. That's ingenious to put that subtle detail in there. And the story is preposterous in the bad acting and that. But if you just want to have a good laugh, it's worth the 30 minutes on Netflix.
Only 30 minutes?
Yeah, it's only 30 minutes. But it was fun. It was fun, delightful, funny, hysterical. I highly recommend it.
Kung Fury.
All
right. The last movie that I recommended that I think had Kung in the title, and if anybody asked me, like, what's the one film you're kind of embarrassed that you recommended, but I enjoyed it, was
okay.
Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw that one.
No, I didn't.
Okay, that is satire of the Kung Fu film. I would say maybe not at its finest, but certainly at its most bizarre, and for some reason, I don't know if I enjoyed it just because of, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I laughed a lot during it.
Well, this will make you laugh. It's very, 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 very well done. According to the internet, they're supposed to be in negotiations to make it a feature-length film. I don't know, 90 minutes.
I suppose that was probably the intent.
Well, I think that was. I think it was.
If this succeeds, and if people like yourself enjoy it enough,
maybe you'll get
enough money to make a...
Exactly. From what I understand, it was a Kickstarter project, and the guy got funded, and so kudos to Netflix for releasing it. Speaking of which, and I think it's a long shot to get any type of Oscar nods, and it is also on Netflix, Tangerine. Did you
I have not seen that. No, that's not one I...
I didn't know if it made it on Now Playing or not, to see if you guys liked it or not.
And it might have been just there were so many films
coming out
at once. There was another one that I've seen that I really liked. It's a documentary called The Best of Enemies. That's one we originally didn't do during its initial release. Got a screener on. It's now out on Blu-ray, DVD, and on demand called The Best of Enemies.
What is that about, real quick?
It's about
vaguely familiar.
William Buckley and Gore Vidal, intellectuals at the time. I think it was the late 60s, Republican and Democratic National Conventions. All the other networks were giving wall-to-wall coverage of the conventions, and ABC was so far behind in the ratings that they're like, we have to try to do something different. So they had a series of debates between Buckley and Vidal, and they really go at each other.
You know what? I think I do remember hearing something on NPR about that. That's why it rang a bell, but I couldn't remember what it was about. Any other documentaries that you've seen since we're talking about documentaries? I know that oftentimes they're not. I will say that I watched the Iron Sheik's documentary, which again
that is one I would like to. Yeah, I would like
being
to see.
A big wrestling fan. I watched it on Netflix. It was very interesting, especially not for me so much his early life in Iran with having some friends that are from Iran that are Persian. I'm always fascinated about hearing tales about that, especially how just chaotic and heinous it was to live in the oppression of the Ayatollah, and then his end. The wrestling, the middle part was okay as far as I'm concerned, but I was more interested in before wrestling, after wrestling, and how it turned out. So I liked it. I thought it was very well done. Any documentaries for you?
I can't honestly. We don't do too many documentaries for the show. The Best of Enemies is the one that sticks out.
We'll talk real quick about the show. Is that a conscious decision or just happens that way? Because you don't do that many documentaries.
Well, we're not doing as many shows.
Okay.
We're not reviewing as many films as we used to.
Okay.
Initially, we used to review 8 films each edition.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're doing 5. Mm-hmm. So we typically try to capture some of the big ones that come out. So typically there's a couple major studio releases that'll come out that we'll cover. And then we'll pick something that's come out on DVD.
Okay.
A lot of it, to be honest, is I'm a father of 2, so my time is now limited.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, if the blockbusters, if I don't want to go see them, if I feel like they're going to be a dud, mm-hmm. a complete and utter dud, we won't do it. Because okay. to be honest, I feel my time's too valuable to go watch movies I think are going to be bad.
Well, you know what? Speaking of that, my final film that I've seen to end this particular part of our conversation from the time that we last talked, it is a dud. I saw a trailer for a film called The Tribe. I saw it on Apple Trailers, and it was a film, and it was the old bait and switch. Here's a trailer. In this 2 minutes, we're going to throw at you what you think the film is. Then when you go into the gateway and you sit down, you're like, I spent $7 on this, or $8, or $9, or whatever. It was trash. It was absolute awful. The premise of The Tribe was that there was a young man who was sent to a boarding school for deaf kids. And there's nothing but all ambient sound. There's no spoken dialogue. It's all done through sign language. And I was captivated by that because I thought, coming-of-age story, given probably because of my teaching background, but coming-of-age story, kid goes to boarding school. I'm curious to see this. Even though I don't know what's going on in terms of sign language, because I know nothing other than, you know, the bird. Anyways, I'm going to go see this. And it turns out to be a complete train wreck of a movie. And I say that because what they don't show you in the trailer, and I ranted about it on this podcast, is that there's a whole... Two of the young men are involved in criminal activities, and the young man gets involved in that. And while I understand that kids are 16, 17, 18 years old could, you know, rob a guy or steal booze from a convenience store or whatnot... And which they do, but then they start to elevate their game into which they're running a prostitution ring out of their dorm. And I'm like, okay, this is where the whole movie goes south. And obviously, the young man that is that's the new kid falls in love with one of the hookers, and there's a big giant love triangle, and it is awful. And just
it sounds like, and I didn't see The Tribe, but it sounds like a. I guess a modern day, because this is probably about 20 years ago that it came out. I feel there's a picture called Kids that came out.
Oh, yes. Harmony did that. What was his first name?
He made
Corinne. Corinne Harmony.
I would say he made some duds after that, but I would also consider Kids to be a dud, where it seems like he's a provocateur.
Yes.
You know, that he's just trying to, you know, rile people up as opposed to making something that of substantial that has something to tell us.
Because I believe Kids was marketed or pushed as it's a documentary, but it wasn't. If I remember correctly,
I don't know if it was trying to sell it as a documentary, but I think it was supposed to be told from a point of realism.
Yeah.
That this is the life that maybe not many kids lead, but a certain portion of kids lead, or you know, a cautionary tale of, of what it's to lead to. But it just seemed like it was trying to push people's buttons,
much like his other great film, Spring Breakers.
You know, then I'm not sure that it's the same.
Is it the same guy?
I don't know.
You know what? I'm sorry. No.
You know, it's at my fingertips.
No, my bad. His wife is in Spring Breakers. Harmony Korman. His wife is
there. Spring Breakers.
You're right.
It was. Yeah, that was a bit
terrible.
Much too.
It was terrible. Sorry. Sorry, he did not direct that. You were correct, but
I wouldn't recommend Spring Breakers, although I did very much appreciate, and I even put it on my list for performances. I did enjoy James Franco in Spring Breakers.
Oh yeah, because he was completely over the top and ridiculous.
He was. Yes.
He was. Uh huh. The highlights of that movie.
I don't think there was as much realism that it was trying. I think it was just it went.
My personal part was that I enjoyed in the first few minutes of it. WWE wrestler Jeff Jarrett and TNA wrestler Jeff Jarrett played the cool youth preacher. That was, I believe, Selena Gomez's like mentor before she went on Spring Break. Whatever 5 minutes he was in the film, that's all I enjoyed of it. But nonetheless, so there you go. Let's move on. Let's talk about some films that are coming up. Let's talk about the big one, Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Obviously, you're excited for it.
I am, and to be honest...
And I say obviously because we talked about it before we started recording, so I know that. The people at home are like, how do you know that?
I am not a Star Wars fanatic by any stretch of the imagination. I've seen all six of the other episodes. Certainly, I agree with most people that say 4, 5, and 6 were leaps and bounds better than 1, 2, and 3.
Sure.
I think Empire Strikes Back is a terrific film.
Yes. My favorite. I think lots of people's favorite.
Too. Yeah, I would say that if you were to ask the Star Wars fanatic, they would agree that Empire is the best of the lot. When I heard that J.J. Abrams was the one that was directing The Force Awakens, that's when I got excited. That's mm-hmm. when it started to pique my interest. And watching some of the trailers, I think, are hitting on some of the main themes that he's run over in some of his other works. I was a huge Lost fan,
mm-hmm.
and I've begun to watch Fringe. And I think some of the same things that he did in those television programs, I think are, at least they allude to, are infused into the most recent Star Wars.
And I confessed off-air that I've stayed away from a lot of the news and gossip and rumors about it. I've watched a couple of the trailers, and that's all.
They've done a pretty good job hiding whatever they have going
sure,
on.
Sure, no, but you know what? I don't even want to roll the dice, to be honest, Paul. Something will pop up on Facebook. I'm not reading it. I don't care. You know, what did Harrison Ford have to say? I'm not reading it because I don't want to know. I don't want it to be spoiled. I want to go, probably, I'm going to see it next week, as I mentioned. I want to be surprised by it. I want to just be surprised by it. I don't want to have any preconceived notions. I want to go and just enjoy it for what it is. And so I'm very excited for it, too. I don't know, again, if I'm the biggest Star Wars fan, but I do have, I mean, as a kid, I had all the action figures. I played with the toys all the time.
Do you still have the action
figures? I do, actually.
You do? Wow, that's impressive.
I do. My garage has two giant shelves. Which Adam can confess to this, our mutual friend, Adam Michaels. And there is nothing but Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Masters of the Universe and wrestling figures on those shelves. So, much to the chagrin of my girlfriend, who wishes that all that crap would go away. Sorry, I'm a geek at heart. I can't get rid of it.
She just doesn't understand.
She doesn't understand, that's right. Exactly.
Plus, those Star Wars figures are really worth something. I mean, most people, like myself, when I collected them as a child, they eventually probably went to Goodwill or Salvation Army and
I
hope we didn't throw them away. I hope someone is benefiting from
some child
from my Starfighter.
Some child does not know the caress of a 6-inch Luke Skywalker action figure, but thanks to you.
Yes.
So I'm excited for it. I think that I agree with you. I think J.J. Abrams will do a good job. I'm even more excited for Rian Johnson's take on the next two, because from what I understand, he's been tapped to direct the next two. And I was a big fan of Looper. I liked what Rian Johnson did. I loved Brick.
Good.
I thought Brick was a phenomenal movie, so I'm curious to see what he'll do in the future.
Yeah, he certainly does interesting things, less populist than
Abrams
stuff.
Sure, sure.
But it'll be interesting to see if he's able to make the... I think Looper, obviously he went from Brick, which was a smaller independent picture, to Looper, which was more mainstream,
mm-hmm.
and he got a chance to work with special effects
mm-hmm.
and sci-fi mm-hmm. as an element. So, you know, hopefully he won't have any problems making the transition to making something that's
this is going to be bigger than
anything else that's out there.
So a couple other films are coming out in the next couple weeks. The remake of Point Break.
We are not reviewing it for the show because there's just so many films that are coming out.
All right, is it necessary to remake Point Break? Though that's my question.
I don't think anyone was asking for it. I mean, I enjoy the first. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy the first Point Break. Did you see the first one?
I've never seen it. I must confess, never seen it. I know some of the scenes from it, but I've never actually sat down and watched it start to finish.
That came out
86, 87?
No, I don't think it wasn't that. I want to say
maybe 90s?
Yes, it was in the 90s. I want to say maybe 92.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's 23 years ago.
Sure.
My guess is it's one of those, we've run out of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to remake Point Break. I think mm-hmm. that's the inspiration for it. And I suppose they're trying to latch onto a new generation while still trying to capture
the Gen Xers
that are like, oh, you know. Although I think most Gen Xers that enjoyed Point Break are kind of ticked off that they're making another
exactly.
one.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But my guess is their interest will be piqued enough that once they've seen Star Wars... And if Star Wars is still sold out and they can't get into it, they'll file into Point Break.
That's probably a good marketing idea. Another one, Sisters, which is the new Tina Fey vehicle with Amy Poehler. I think it looks funny. I think it has a chance to entertain folks. I think it's obviously not beating Star Wars.
If it's got Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, you can sign me up for it.
Sure. Yeah, I think it looks good.
I'm really looking forward to it. I enjoy Baby Mama. They worked well together, of course, mm-hmm. on the desk of Saturday Night Live. Sure. They're good together at Baby Mama. To be honest, I'm a little surprised that it's taken that long to put the two together in a movie yeah. again. I don't know if their projects have just been butting heads and they've, you know, taken different courses, but I think they should be,
comedy gold, hopefully.
Yeah, they are. Right. Yeah, I mean, they are. Yeah. They're good even on the, speaking of gold, on the Golden Globe.
Yeah, sure.
They've done a nice job.
All right, one that I think looks awful, Daddy's Home. I'm sorry, I think that this is one of those previews where you're seeing all the funny stuff in those 2 minutes. I don't see where that's going to be a good film. That's just my humble opinion.
I liked The Other Guys,
okay,
which had the Wahlberg-Ferrell uh-huh. combination.
Okay.
Not that I've enjoyed everything that Ferrell's done.
Sure.
But again, it's one of those, if he's in it, you can sign me up.
Okay.
I'm a big Will Ferrell fan. I guess I'm hoping for the best.
Now I'll throw one out there that I don't think comes out until January, but Michael Moore has a new documentary, Where to Invade Next. Have you checked out any of the previews or anything for that particular film?
I typically shy away from Michael Moore.
So. Okay, so not a fan?
No, I am not a fan of Michael Moore.
Look, I will freely admit, I think that Michael Moore has had some very interesting projects and some awful projects. So I'm not one that says he walks on water and he can do no wrong. I think that some of his films are very thought-provoking. And I say films. I don't believe they're documentaries. I'm sorry, because I think that he does not make it. Even though it's supposed to be a documentary, I think he's clearly, evidently biased as to his side of this tale.
Yeah, well, and that I wouldn't say that precludes it from being a documentary. Certainly, you know, you're getting his version of what the truth is.
Sure, sure.
That being said,
I think
ideologically we're on completely
sure.
Other ends of the spectrum.
I agree with that. For those that don't know, at home, it's basically he just takes a tour of different countries and see how other people live. Like, how does a typical married couple with a couple of kids live in Switzerland or Scotland or Ireland? It kind of does a compare and contrast versus America, you know. And while I will probably go see it just out of curiosity, I totally will say, again, I don't take everything he says with a grain of salt. I take everything he says with a grain of salt. I don't necessarily think he's automatic. And I disagree with him on a lot of things, too.
To me, what's more remarkable is how insignificant he's become.
That is true.
I mean, you're talking about a guy that Roger and me, which at the time, again, I like to revisit it through, and I'll probably be looking it through a completely different perspective. Roger and Me, which I thought was a terrific film.
I agree.
Of course, he was also more knowledgeable because it was right in his backyard, and that's sure. the one that kind of put him on the map. I want to say his follow-up was the big, I can't even think
of it. Was it Bowling for Columbine?
No, it was another one.
Canadian Bacon, which was a fictional movie. He was the director of that after Roger and Me, which was John Candy, where we invaded Canada. I don't believe it did very well in the box office, but he did direct that film, which I think is next. But in terms of his documentary,
not the big hit, it's the big something where he explores the impact of Nike
and capitalism. Yes,
it's kind of a critique of capitalism.
Sure.
Then he did Bowling for Columbine. And then he did
Fahrenheit 9/11, yeah. Which I did not like. I thought it was not very well done. Well,
and that's one where I was well aware of what the facts were.
Sure.
So some of the other ones where I might not have agreed with his slant or mm-hmm. his ideology mm-hmm. on the issues he was tackling, I guess I was ignorant enough not to know. But I am pretty stringent in my followings of politics.
Sure.
And I knew he was playing loose with the facts in Fahrenheit 9/11.
Sure.
9/11.
Well, again, I just was throwing it out there to say it will probably be something I will catch. But you make a very valid point. He is very insignificant because even when he was putting out Fahrenheit 9/11 or Sicko or...
Sicko actually flopped. I mean...
It did. But I mean,
I would say his heyday was Bowling for Columbine back-to-back with Fahrenheit 9/11. Those were he was hitting stride. I think it was after Fahrenheit 9/11. I think was it. I'm trying to remember what came next. If it was
Sicko, and then the anti-capitalism one. I can't remember what.
And people are just not going to see them. We didn't review either of those two films.
Mm-hmm. I thought Sicko was a very thought-provoking film. I liked it, and I like Bowling for Columbine, and I like Roger and Me. But you make a valid point that it seems like he's just kind of like the recluse. if you will, now. He just lives up in Flint. He has a theater. I know he has a theater somewhere up right in Michigan.
He has a film festival.
And film there, festival, yeah. too, yeah. But he has kind of just disappeared, so to speak.
Well, I think part of it is that he's alienated.
Sure.
Half of sure. people.
Those in power. Yeah, sure.
Or those on a certain side of the aisle.
Right, no, right, exactly.
You know where
exactly.
he's coming from, and either you agree or disagree with right. him. And
sure.
he's lost half of his audience. I would also say his films have gotten...
crappier.
Yes. yeah, I mean they have to a certain extent, so that hasn't helped either.
Yeah,
and sure. he's trying to find topics that are provoking, and I think he's trying to hit on ones that hit for the time. Certainly Fahrenheit 9/11,
his
idea was he was hoping and having an impact on the presidential election at mm-hmm. the time, mm-hmm. Which failed miserably, mm-hmm. but he succeeded well at the box office, so a lot of people wanted to see it. I think he's having a hard time coming up with issues that are as engaging.
All right, well, as we're getting up there to about 53 minutes or so, let's talk real quick. It is Christmas time here in a few, 8 days, 9 days? 10 days?
Yeah, no, we're eight. No, you're right. 9 days away.
9 days away. Okay.
Christmas Eve kind of gets sucked into me. I guess.
Yeah,
it's all part of it. It's as good. I enjoy Christmas Eve as much or more than Christmas itself.
Sure.
Maybe
sure.
It's the anticipation.
Exactly. But let's talk about favorite Christmas movie.
Now one of my favorite movies. It's set during Christmas, but I do not consider it a Christmas film.
Good, because I was going to gripe about this because there was a particular theater at the beginning of December. It was like, Christmas movie, midnight showing of Die Hard. Die Hard is not really a
Die
Christmas
Hard is
movie.
Not, that's no, that is not the film that I was going to refer to.
Good, thank you.
but I enjoy Die Hard.
No, I do too, but it's not a Christmas movie.
No, it's
man.
An action
just,
film that's set during Christmas.
Yeah.
Just like It's a Wonderful Life is a drama that happens to be set during Christmas.
True.
Miracle on 34th Street.
The
original from 47 with Edmund Gwynn and Natalie Wood. Is my favorite Christmas movie.
Okay.
It hits at next to The Birth of Christ, which is what Christmas is all about. If you're going the Santa route.
Sure.
That's the secular version. The pure secular version of Christmas, I guess.
See, folks didn't think they were going to get a dash of religion while they were listening to this episode of the podcast. So what? That's all right. I'm going to go A Christmas Story because I just, as a kid, I think... I think a lot of times when it comes to favorite movies, it's that the place and the time that you first see the film. And to me, A Christmas Story, I remember going to the theater. I remember enjoying it as a kid. And I think it just, to me, while it may not be religious or secular or whatnot, it's just, to me, is the wacky family and the quest to get the one toy that you can't get or not allowed to get. Just, it resonates with me. So.
Well, yes, it latches on to... Mm-hmm. And to me, that's why the film's transcendent. I mean,
sure.
it's set in, I want to say, the mid to late 50s.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But the things that Ralphie goes through, maybe not, listening to the radio show where you find out that the answer is Ovaltine. We can't relate to that. Most kids can relate to, as you had mentioned, the prized possession.
Yeah.
Of what you want, or
like for me, it was
sticking your tongue in the boy.
Everything's
crazy
exactly.
at one point in time. It's
exactly,
not,
yeah,
it actually worked. Would that actually occur? Yes, it would.
Yes, I never got the G.I. Joe USS Flag aircraft carrier because that thing was it was the size of this counter. It was gigantic.
But there are toys you can recollect back to.
That was the one that was that's my Red Ryder BB gun. I never got that because my parents were like, "I'm not spending $200 on a toy." And it's gigantic. So,
right.
No.
And there's also the moment, to me, as much as the excitement of unwrapping the Red Ryder BB gun.
Sure.
Because there is the toy that I'm sure you did want and did get and were excited that you did
receive. That's true.
It sounds like you have maybe some pent-up frustration still from your childhood and not getting that gift. But there's the moment where Ralphie, and I can't remember his brother's name in the picture. When they first come down the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And they see the tree lit up and mm-hmm. all the toys under there. And, of course, there's the excitement of what is, once you unwrap it, what is it? And, of course, there's always the one gift that you're going to get. Maybe not the dress-up bunny costume,
but
everybody's getting the gift. And they're like, thanks. Mm-hmm. There's so many relatable items in that picture that, I mean, that's Again, that's right behind The Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah. So, well, with that being said, let's talk a little bit about Now Playing, because we've talked about it here and there. Let's fill the folks in that are listening. When's it on? How many episodes do you guys have coming out here soon?
We have a break due to my co-host's schedule. He's going out of town for the holidays. So we're going to have a big, typically, as I mentioned before, we've scaled it back since I have kids to five films we're reviewing. Since we're taking, we're going to have a lapse of about a month. Typically, the show's shot bi-weekly, but we're having a month lapse between the show we just shot tonight, December 16th, to our next show, which is January 14th. We're going to have an hour-long edition where we're going to review eight films. And it'll be some of the biggest ones because there's so many big films that come out during this time. It also happens to be our 500th episode that we'll be taking on January 14th. So.
All right, 500.
How many years have we been going now?
That is a good question.
17 years?
It is on WOCC-TV3, which is Otterbein University's television station, which is actually, truth be told, that's where we're recording this episode.
Yes,
in an editing bay. And for those that live in the Columbus area, I know that the coverage is pretty much just the Westerville area and some of North Columbus, correct?
Yeah, it spans. I've heard that people can pick it up from the Easton area as well.
Okay, so all right.
It spills out into that area, Easton, and maybe a little into Worthington, but it's more or less Channel 3 in Westerville.
There you go. So, when is it on? Does Now Playing have a regular time slot, or does it kind of bounce around?
Honestly, I do not know. It's one of those, it's like SportsCenter. It's on.
Well, I gotta be honest with you,
Rob. It's on quite a bit.
That was a question I had, because I looked through the schedule, I'm like, wait, it's on Monday, it's on Thursday. Wait, is Monday the replay?
Well, I think we're a filler from time to time, too. If a gap needs to be filled, you can just throw our 30-minute program in there. So, sometimes we'll get tacked on if there's, maybe a two-hour block for city council or school board, but for some reason, school board or city council only met for an hour and a half. You get more Now Playing.
There you go. Is it available online?
It used to be streaming online. Okay. I don't think we're currently anymore.
Okay. All right. There you go.
So, if not, you'll just have to go to the podcast to hear about it.
There you go. All right. Well, with that, let's start wrapping things up. You got anything that you want to plug? Any social media outlets or anything along those lines? Or no?
How, again, I'm a father of two, and the blog hit the wall quite some time ago. So
it's all right, man.
You can follow me. I don't even post much on Twitter or Facebook anymore. You'll have to go to WOCC or...
There you go.
Or our podcast here.
There you go. All right. Well, with that... Thanks for coming on, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
I always love to talk movies, so, definitely we'll have you back.
Anytime.
All right, you got it. With that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and then on the other side of that break, I'll wrap up this episode. Well, there you have it, folks. My conversation with Mr. Paul Markoff. Film critic extraordinaire, I'm going to say. There you go. His show, Now Playing, of course, available on WOCC-TV3, which is Otterbein University's television station. And I know it's a very small, small window of people that get that television station, which is kind of a sad thing. I think that, again, they're kind of doing their own thing up there at Otterbein, and I think more people should be able to see it. And especially here, their radio station. They have a really good radio station up there, too. But... nonetheless, I appreciate that Paul came on to talk movies with me. And you know what? It's your turn to let me know what you think. It is. Did you think what Paul and I talked about was right on point? Or did you think that we were completely, completely off point with some of our comments? Well, there's only one way you can do that, and that's to be interactive. You can tweet me at PVDMVP. You can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. You could maybe even somehow... represent your ideas with a picture and use Instagram. I'm also at the username of PVDMVP. So a couple different ways you can get in touch with me and let me know, what did you think about this episode, episode number 83 of the PVD cast. So, all right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think at this particular time, I should let you know that it's time for me to tell you a little bit about... oh, there's the music right there. Orlando's Face! That's right. right, for those that don't know, this is the part of the podcast where I tell you about something that I think is pretty cool, that I think you should check out, and I want to let you know about it, man. So, with that being said, I am going to mention something that, quite frankly, many people are going to go, oh my god, John, what's taking you so long? Well, I don't know, what can I say? Over the last about 2.5 months, I have been watching Netflix original series Daredevil, and that is my fave for this episode. And I know people are like, oh my god, John, it came out so many months ago. Well, I was busy, man. I don't know what to tell you. I really, really dug this television series. I mean, it was gritty. It had some comedy to it. I think that, to be honest with you, the acting was actually pretty good. Eldrin Henson, who plays Foggy Nelson, was really good in that role. And, man, Vincent D'Onofrio is the Kingpin. Phenomenal job. I mean, I've always looked at the Kingpin as being a very one-dimensional character in the Marvel Universe, but he brought him to life, man. Gave him a lot of different layers, which I appreciated. And, you know, I'm probably speaking to hardly anyone out there that hasn't checked out Daredevil. But if you haven't, do so. Get on Netflix. Check out Daredevil. I will be checking out Jessica Jones as well, probably here in the springtime. I will check out that particular show as well. And there you have it. So my fave for this episode, Daredevil. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, before I say goodbye and before I wrap things up, hey, I just want to let you know real quickly that if you're looking for some cool comics to read, then you need to check out the catalogs of two great independent comic book publishers, Nick's Comics and BackPorchComics.com. No matter the genre, no matter if you want something that's kid-friendly, you want something that's a Western, science fiction, or whatnot, these two websites will have something for your liking. I mean, you've heard these guys come on the podcast, Bob and Ken, and talk about their projects. Well, now's the time to plunk down some cash and buy some of those projects, darn it! Simply just go over to Nick's Comics, NIXComics.com, or BackPorchComics.com, and pick something up, man. Because let's be honest, you need to read more anyways. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later!